The last time I heard the word anthropology used in a sentence, not the store, the science, I was a college student. During that time where you decided your fate for the semester, signing up for classes, and a friend said, "I'm going to take Anthropology 101 because it doesn't start till 10 a.m. But he had no idea what it was about. And I envisioned studies about remote villages off the grid somewhere, observing behavior and culture and tradition unknown to the rest of the world. So I was curious a few years ago when I came across an article entitled "Anthropology in Practice" by an anthropologist who lives in New York. There are no remote tribes in New York. But Crystal DeCosta was trying to answer that age-old question of every anthropologist that lives in the state of New York and that we find in the front of every Walmart. Why don't people return their shopping carts? It was a study of social behavior. And she says there are five categories of cart returners. See if you can identify yourself. There's the always returner. Doesn't matter what the weather is like or how far the walk might be, they always return their cart because they feel this sense of obligation. But then there's the never returner. They never return their carts because they feel as if it's somebody else's job to collect the carts and put them in the designated areas. But then there's the convenience returner. They return their carts if they are parked close to that designated area where you return it. And then there's the pressure returner. They will return their carts if they look around and feel like someone is watching them. And then uniquely, the child-driven returner. They make a game out of returning the carts with their children. That it's a study of social behavior. And she says there are two types of social norms at work in all of this. The injunctive and descriptive. That will not be on the test. The injunctive is what we think others think about us. And the descriptive is all of those clues and instructions that we receive, like the signs posted reminding us to return our carts, that both demonstrate the power of the influence of others, directly and indirectly, in our lives. For example, if we pull up to a grocery store and there are no carts scattered about, we are more likely to return our carts when we are finished, as opposed to carts found everywhere. Now, on the one hand, I don't think we need to go around shackled by that concern of what others think about us. But on the other hand, it does remind us of the power of an example set by others. That there is a real danger of looking around this world, seeing its problems and hardships as overwhelming as they can be, and assuming we cannot have a meaningful impact upon them. But woven into humanity is the power of influence on others. It's where the principle meets the practical. where large problems are addressed in small ways. As the psalmist suggests, in God's light, we are led to more light. That in God's love, it brings us to more love. In God's hope, it can lead us to more hope in us and through us. It's like that beautiful scene on Christmas Eve where we take the light of Christ and then we pass it one hand to the next, another hand to another, and then the room is filled with the light of God. In 2019, we will mark the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the first slave ship to our shores. That anniversary will take place in August, for the first ship arrived in 1619, the impact of which we still feel. When we think about how the principle meets the practical, one example from history is the Civil Rights Movement, where the principle that everyone is created by God met the practical. Voices gathered together, changing our way of life, altering laws in courtrooms, challenging norms, pushing people's perspectives to a new place. And the church and its voice was found on both sides. That we can lament how the voice of the church hindered such a movement in many ways. But it was also found on the positive side of it. That Martin Luther King Jr. was many things. Civil rights leader, a grand orator, a diligent organizer, a passionate leader, a studied scholar, but first, he was a minister of the gospel. That his life had been shaped by the rhythms and the calling of the church, which is shared by all of us. That he had seen God's light and it had led to more light. That we cannot understand the life of Martin Luther King Jr. without the life of the church. It's where he learned the principles of love over hate, justice over evil, peace over violence, forgiveness over revenge, and hope over despair. And then it became the practical. That we should never underestimate what takes place in these pews and hallways and around these tables, in here and out there. It's what gathers together our many gifts, which work for the common good. As Paul describes them, as diverse and different as they all are. But it is any act of solidarity, humility, hospitality, or compassion, animated by the one Spirit of God, which is always at work in this world. And it shows up in such practical ways. Whether that's holding an infant in the nursery or listening to a young person sift through life, celebrating a baptism or a wedding, reaching out to feed the hungry, remembering the prisoner, welcoming the stranger, standing up for others, grieving at a funeral, or gathering for worship. It is all we do for the common good. And if we are not careful, we can begin to think that what we do here in this place is rather pedestrian. Just another routine. Just another lesson. But let us never forget the power of what is practical. It might just be learning people's names, eating together, working on a committee with one another, dropping off a meal, asking a question, laughing, lamenting, grieving. It is where the principles of who we are and that we find in the life of Jesus meet the practical moments of our everyday lives. When I was in college, my great-grandparents lived in Atlanta, Georgia, just about an hour and a half away. And every once in a while, on a Saturday afternoon, I would drive and go visit them. They were fortunate to live in the same house together their entire lives. My great-grandmother passed away when she was 98. My great-grandfather a year later when he was 94. And their days were very practical. When my great-grandmother lost most of her sight, each morning, my great-grandfather would read the newspaper to her. And at night, they'd sit around this tiny little kitchen table and listen to the Braves play on the radio, talking about all of their favorite players. And then they tried to help each other make sure they were taking the right medications each day. They were married for 72 years. When my great-grandmother passed away, a couple weeks after the service, I went to see my great-grandfather. We sat down in his sunroom, which is where he spent most of his time. I had no idea what to say. But then he just leaned back in his chair with all of the meaning in his voice. He said, "Well, I have lost my right arm. And for some reason, in that moment, I realized power of the practical. How it shapes our lives and gives them meaning, and how it can reverberate out from us to others in quiet but powerful ways." And then, without even realizing it, he drove home the point. He said, "But each morning I get up and I walk to the mailbox, and then I walk to the neighbor's mailbox and back, trying to get a little bit of exercise. And then I sit at my desk and I try to read a chapter in the Bible, keeping my mind and my soul awake. That I try to meet each and every morning with a little bit of gratitude." Let us never forget the power of small things. It's where the principle meets the practical, where our gifts are given for the sake of the common good. It's where God's light leads us to more light for the sake of God's world. Amen.